The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The information and ideas provided within this show are intended for educational purposes only and not intended as investment advice. The hosts of this show do not provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your tax or legal professional regarding your individual situation. No information should be interpreted as securities advice. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, and investment professionals. While we have endeavored to ensure the accuracy of the information in this program, we do not guarantee or give any warranty as to the accuracy, timeliness, or completeness of any information. The process of buying and selling a business can be frightening for the parties involved. What paperwork is needed? What is the true market value of the business? How do you know what transactions are required to be processed in addition to the sale of the business? Welcome to Biz Broker Talk, where you'll find the answers to these questions and much more. Your hosts, Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding, have a decade of experience providing business broker services to large and small businesses. Today, they're ready to help you. Here's Robert and Doug.
Welcome to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells
and Doug Scheiding.
Today, we're going to be visiting with Darren Mize. He's an ASA appraiser with GCF Valuation. Last week, we discussed finding the right franchise with Tom Raymond. So today's show is going to focus on, does it make sense for a business owner to have an independent valuation in preparation for a sale? Darren Mize is an ASA, that's the accredited senior appraiser designation in business valuation from the American Society of Appraisers. Darren's has been doing this for over 15 years as a business valuation and specialized in valuations for small to medium-sized merger and acquisition candidates. Welcome, Darren.
Thanks, Robert. Good to be here. And Doug, thank you as well.
Absolutely. So segment one, we're going to talk about benefits to the broker. So maybe we can just start off with that since that's near and dear to our hearts.
Well, I mean, to me, as a listing broker, obviously brokers represent both buyers and sellers, but coming from the seller standpoint, the broker has a vested interest in making sure that anybody who wants to engage them to sell their company has the ability to list it at the right price and set it to market. And so the valuation generally should be a good first step in establishing that value, because you want to make sure that the selling candidate has as much information as possible, that they can be informed about whether or not they think it's the right time to sell, and obviously making sure that their perception of value is more of the reality when it comes to the actual value or fair market value of the company. So to me, I think having a valuation is really the best first step that a broker can do, and there are certainly a lot of advantages to that.
Yeah, in terms of every seller that typically comes in the door thinks their business is worth $1 million, and in actuality it's probably $500,000. But that's kind of the analogy that we always use.
Yeah, well, I think that I would say the majority of the business owners that we've come in contact with, not all of them, but generally most of them have a perception of value that that can be a little misguided. So I would have to agree with that.
A lot of times we see it comes from the family or a friend that has sold a business before, and it's always based on some crazy multiple that has no basis, or they can't define the basis.
Well, and I think that's some of the downfall of seeking guidance from certain people, whether they're confidants, attorneys, CPAs, or even other friends. I mean, there's a lot of misguided information out there about how to value a company, what their business is worth, and so you want to make sure, just as you would like to engage an attorney for legal advice, you want to make sure that you engage an expert to make sure that you're getting good qualified valuation advice and making sure that the company is valued properly so that you can identify the fair market value of the business.
Well, in terms of the different types of valuations that that you offer, maybe we can start off with that and then get into a little bit about the process.
Well, there are, I think it's first a good idea to establish the fact that there are lots of different reasons why somebody would want a valuation. And there are lots of different valuation types that you can use for those reasons. But when it comes to selling a company, and especially when you're working with a broker who's trying to help you with that, you don't need much. I mean, ultimately, there are a lot of qualified appraisers out there that have a variety of different services, and most of them are fairly expensive. I mean, our firm in particular really caters to the small business owner, so our fees are fairly inexpensive. But, I mean, you can get good qualified valuation guidance from a qualified appraiser for, you know, $5,000 or less. Those usually come in the form of what we call calculation reports. They're very basic. They're very limited in terms of detail and information, but they get the job done. Provides the broker with a good solid understanding of where the value is and what it should be set at, and it helps the business owner get a good grasp on whether or not it's the right time to sell based on what they thought their perception of value really was.
And what's the time frame on that then?
Well, typically for reports like that, you find that and we'll stick with the calculation report for a minute, but
sure.
The calculation report typically shouldn't require any more than about 3 or 4 weeks to put together, and sometimes it can be a lot less than that. And obviously, when you look at the fee structure for that type of report, anything less than $5,000, the appraiser's not going to spend a great deal of time. But the appraiser is responsible for making sure that they are able to provide a credible conclusion of value. But in a calculation report, our typical turnaround time is usually around 2 to 3 weeks, and that's pretty standard for us.
And you said basically the type of report is somewhat based on the purpose. Maybe we can at least talk about the other types of report, even though they're maybe not be used quite as much by brokers.
Well, I think when you follow general uniform standards of professional appraisal practice and a lot of our industry or association-related guidelines, you're going to find that there really are two basic styles of report. You have a calculation report, which can be diverted into maybe a letter form opinion or some other type of modified restricted use report. And then you have what we term as a complete appraisal, and that category is divided into two components, complete appraisal summary and complete appraisal self-contained. I would tell you that the majority of the work that we do usually falls in either the calculation sector or the complete appraisal summary sector. It's rare that you're really ever going to have a need for a self-contained report unless you're doing something really formal, and usually that contains litigation. But beyond that, your calculation report and your complete appraisal summary report are going to be the two main service sectors that you'll have to choose from.
And the self-contained report, when you say formal, is that like for IRS purposes as well?
It's typically, I would say that even for IRS purposes, you can get away with a complete appraisal summary because those two reports essentially follow the same process. You're gathering the same level of information, you're doing the same level of diligence, and the same analysis and using the same approach to value. The only difference between the two is that the summary report is a summarized version of a self-contained report. So when it comes to self-contained reports, you're typically only going to find something like that. I would say mostly 9 times out of 10 you're going to find it just really for litigation purposes. Everything else you can usually get away with on the summary side.
Bankruptcy, divorce, court, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, all of those. I mean, if you look at the different purposes, you've got things like mergers and acquisitions. You've got SBA lending. You've got gift tax. You've got estate tax. You've got bankruptcy. You've got FASB-related activities. You've got employee stock ownership plans or anything IRA or investment-related sometimes will require a business valuation. So, but then you got other things like internal business planning, shareholder buyouts, buy-sell agreements, life insurance policies,
You mentioned divorce. We do some of that work as well. So there are all kinds of reasons why somebody would need a valuation. And the problem with many people is that most will assume that one valuation report will suit all of those different purposes, and that's not the case. They're very different, and the valuation report must contain language in it which specifies the exact purpose and the intended use and user of the report.
And that's the first couple of questions you ask, isn't it?
That's
exactly what it is. What's the purpose and who's the intended user?
Yeah, because if you go into a meeting like that, you want to be clear on exactly what your client's looking for. I've met with a lot of people who've represented companies where they've come to me saying they need a valuation, and their response to my first question was, what's the purpose? And they said, well, they actually need it because they want to know what it's worth in case they want to sell it. But when you start digging into the reason why they're thinking about selling it, you might find that in some cases they need it because they want to know what it's worth, but they want to use it for divorce purposes. So you need to be very clear as to, one, what's the purpose of the valuation, two, who's the intended user, what is the intended use of the report, and specifically what you're appraising. And that could be 100% of the company. It could be a minority position of 10%. There could be all different reasons. So you want to make sure that if you're meeting with somebody, you ask a lot of good questions up front before you begin to determine the type of report that's going to fit that need.
Well, in terms of getting back to the benefits of the broker, and let's talk a little bit about the process of the, I guess, the calculation of value, or in some cases, the complete appraisal.
Okay. Well, I think the one thing that I believe that the broker can gain the most out of this process is commitment. And the reason why I say that is because that there are a lot of sellers out there who are just interested in seeing what their business is worth. They may think they want to go to market with it. They're not really sure. But generally, you can find out whether or not they're committed right up front because, the valuation is going to cost a fee. There's a fee involved. So establishing commitment usually can come in the form of whether or not they're willing to pay the fee or not. And if they're not, then you may not necessarily be in a position where you've got a seller that's committed to the process from front to end. And that's really important. But beyond that, you have other things that really benefit the broker. You've got the ability to make sure that the broker and their selling client are on the same page when it comes to value. We alluded to this earlier. You may have a business owner that thinks his business is worth $1 million. You may have a business broker that may think it's worth $200. The idea of having a business valuation is to make sure that somebody who's qualified to do the work is going to establish that market value for you, that so that you guys, and when I say guys, meaning the broker and the seller, are in a position to where they can make sure that they are on the same page. And if the broker is thinking that the business is worth less and the owner's thinking it's worth more, you got to come to a medium. The valuation is really the only way to do that. Beyond that, it's selling the company. It may be a very difficult process if you're that far apart. So that at least allows the seller to make an informed decision as to whether or not the price is right for them to go to market.
In terms of working with brokers, I guess you work with brokers all across the country.
We do. We have a national following of brokers we've been working with for probably 15 or 16 years now. I would say starting in around 2008 or 2009, obviously the M&A market, especially as it relates to small businesses, took a pretty big hit. A lot of the brokers that we were working with at the time either went out of business or had to go on a hiatus for a while to figure out what they were going to do until the market began to pick back up again. And now that
right.
the market, the market is slowly beginning to make a turn in the right direction, and it has been for about the last two or three years, we're beginning to see a lot more of that business, especially, I would say, over the course of the last 6 months.
Yeah, I think we met about 10 years ago or so, and a lot of the faces that we used to see in the brokerage community has dwindled quite a bit.
Well, you got to remember, too, back in then, I mean, we really got into the thick of it probably in the late 90s, early 2000, and those were high times for everybody. The market was great. Companies were selling like hotcakes. Brokers were in front of just a huge demand for business. That in turn, gave us a lot of business as well because at that time, nobody really had a problem with spending a couple $1,000s on a fee to get a valuation done to sell the company because, people were buying and people were selling, and it was a really, really good time. But, starting around 2007, 2008, and really into 2009, that's when things really got bad. And it's been a slow process coming back, but it's making a turn in the right direction.
Well, I know that in our practice, using or suggesting a business valuation helps with credibility as a broker, because probably not many are doing that.
Well, the thing with the credibility side of the equation is that you want to come together with a buyer and a prospective seller that have some common ground. You don't want to be in a position where the seller is listing the business for $2 million and the buyer is willing to come to the table with $1 million. You're just not going to get anywhere fast with that kind of interaction. So the credibility of the valuation comes into play, because you've got an established value. It's been set by an accredited appraiser with adequate experience, with qualified guidance and advice. And in those positions, you're likely to be in a better negotiation situation, because you've got a starting point. And when you have a starting point, that really facilitates the ability for a negotiation to take place. And once you get things going in the right direction with the negotiation, you'll find that the valuation facilitates a shorter negotiation window, ultimately, hopefully, which leads to the sale of the company.
Yeah, I think all of our transactions over $1 million sales price, we ask that the seller get a valuation so we have a basis for discussion. Because, you know, if you have an owner-operator, privately held business that's going to, you know, transact over $1 million, you've got a lot of discretionary and a lot of issues usually with a company that's been around for an extended period of time. And it just, to us, it just clears the air for all parties involved.
Well, I think it's a great idea. Even for those businesses at that size, you got to remember, too, that there are a lot of small companies out there that still need the same guidance. So, you know, whether you're generating $100,000 a year in sales or you want to sell the company for, you know, $200,000 to $300,000, the valuation doesn't change. The theory behind it and the benefits that you get from it doesn't change. You want to make sure that everybody is on a sound footing when it comes to values so that you can get the deal done. Big or small, the valuation still plays a critical role in the process.
Well, in terms of also, we've got about 1 minute left before the break, but what about pre-qualification for SBA loans and a broker doing that?
Well, especially with a calculation report, you got to remember that initially the report's intended for the business broker and his or her selling client. So it's prepared for them. They are the intended users. When it comes to SBA lending, that report can be used as part of the underwriting pre-qualification process. It can't be used as part of the actual lending process, but the underwriter can certainly take a look at it and at least get a basis for where the value and the purchase price has been set, and get a clear understanding of you know, whether or not it's going to work in their box, per se. It definitely helps in the process, that's for sure.
Well, very good. We've been visiting with Darren Mize. We will return and we'll speak about benefits to the seller of having a business valuation.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com.
If you want to know about investing in emerging and frontier markets, or if you have experience in this field but still need to know more, tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. Gavin explores news, current trends, and insights about both categories of investing. His guest experts, along with his own knowledge, will help you stay above the line when it comes to growth potential, whether in funds or equities. He will look at what to invest in and avoid. Tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
This is BizBroker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Darren Mize. He's an ASA appraiser at GCF Valuation. And this segment, we're going to discuss the benefits to the seller. I think probably the first and foremost is getting a business valuation to maximize the shareholder value.
Well, I think, from a valuation standpoint, I think the benefits are fairly straightforward. You know, if you're a business owner and you want to sell your company, obviously, as you mentioned, you want to make sure that you sell it for as much as you can get for it. It's got to be fair, no doubt, but you want to maximize the value of the company and you want to make sure you don't leave any money on the table. We alluded to this a little bit earlier, but the valuation at least gives the seller the opportunity to make a decision, an informed decision, as to whether or not it's the right time. So when you're looking at the perception of value from the seller's standpoint, you want to make sure that what they want to sell it for and what it's worth are roughly the same number. If not, and nine times out of ten, generally the value of the company is going to be a little less than what they think it's worth. It's going to be up to them as to whether or not it's the right time. If not, what you can get from that and the benefit that you can get from that is the ability to understand what the value drivers are of that particular business, so that if they want to improve upon those drivers and increase the value of the company, they have a pretty decent path as to how to get there. So that's definitely a major benefit to the seller.
And we like the report because it provides a wealth of information for us to discuss with the seller about the particulars of the business, such as any deficiencies, areas that they should spend their time in order to get it to the point that we want to get to as compared to other businesses in the industry.
Yeah, and those are what we consider to be value drivers. So I try to do a basic and quick discussion when it comes to value for the sellers that we talk to, and the first thing I always tell them is that there are really two key drivers of value, and one of them is cash flow. Obviously, that's a big one, and two is risk. Everything else is collateral. So, where you're located, the quality of your staff, the great software that you got, the 1-800 number, the catchy 1-800 number, all of your proprietary data, databases, and internal mechanisms are all great. But at the end of the day, if you're not generating any cash flow, there isn't going to be much value there. So it's important for them to understand where those value drivers are so that if they decide they want to take some time to improve upon them, they know which ones to focus on. But I always tell everybody, if you're going to focus on anything, cash flow is going to be the key component. And you can only improve upon that by doing two things. You can either increase your sales or decrease your operating expenses. Beyond that, there isn't much that you can do, obviously outside of acquisition. And risk, risk comes in all different forms. But, cash flow is going to be, as they say, cash is king. Cash flow is a key component.
And what we tell the client to do is with this report is sit down with their financial advisor, the tax advisor, and understand how to best structure a sale given these parameters. This is a good calculation here. What assumptions should we be making and how we should position the market? Is seller carrying a note? Does that give you a benefit? Is an earnout in there? Is it 100% sale now? There's a whole lot that can be gained from evaluation when an owner sits down with their tax advisor to do the planning for the sale, to understand those tax implications.
Well, that's a good point, and a lot of people don't realize. If you really come back and just think about the financial aspect of the sale of a company, there are a lot of great small businesses out there that may be generating $200,000 or $300,000 a year in cash flow. It's steady, no major risks. But when you're talking about the idea of selling a company for $800,000 or even $1 million, you got a few other things you got to consider. One is any commissions that you got to pay to your broker. Two, you got to worry about capital gains tax. And then what's left, and if you're going to use some kind of a note, a seller note, you don't have all that cash in front of you. So at the end of the day, you might find that, you know, while I'm generating $200,000 or $300,000 a year in cash flow, if I sell this company, I may only get another $200,000 or $300,000 a year for a couple of years. And after that, what are you left with? So in many cases, you'll find that a lot of the smaller companies and those owners of those companies are thinking, while I may want to sell the company, I don't know that I want to put myself in a position where I'm out of cash in 2 or 3 years. So they considered the idea of just keeping it, maybe hiring somebody to run it for them to gain some benefits of not working so much. So there are a lot of things to consider.
And there's always that issue where the owner wants to sell, they've had it, they've come in and talked to the broker, you've done evaluation, they've fallen back in love with the business when they focused on it again, it's making money the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, I mean, most small business owners generally have a pretty decent lifestyle. I mean, you know, to some people, $200,000 or $300,000 a year isn't much, but to a lot of people, it is. And the luxury of having that cash come in and year out to be put you in a position where you have the ability to travel and to do the things that you love to do, it becomes a lifestyle. And giving that up is a hard choice to make.
Well, when you work with brokers, because you mentioned, you know, talking to the seller, typically the broker is kind of your feet on the street.
Yeah, they're really good about providing us with their perception and insight as to the marketability of the company. You know, what the market is like in their particular area for businesses like that. They give us a pretty good idea of you know, where the risks are in the company. But you know, our job is really to use that as part of our overall analysis. We don't rely on it. We use it as more of a contributing factor to the analysis. Our job is to make sure that we are able to identify as much cash flow as possible to maximize the value and try to identify all of the different risks so that the value of the company is commensurate with that cash flow and the risk.
Yeah, what we'll do as brokers is the recasting or normalizing, which we've talked about in previous shows. But on your side, you're doing a lot of the industry research on that type of business.
Yeah, we obviously, from what we do, we have access to a good number of databases that provide us with economic research, industry research. We have a pretty good widespread access to comparable transaction databases that we can use to give us all of the tools that we need to appraise the business accurately and fairly.
Well, in terms of, you know, as a broker, we're always biased towards the market databases and the DM, you know, that methodology, the DMDM. But maybe we can talk about the income approach and the asset approach, because that's as a broker, we tend to minimize those.
Well, I would say first, going back to the market approach, which you refer to as the DMDM. The one thing people need to understand is that the market approach is just one of three approaches to use on the evaluation of a company. Some, you know, the data out there is it's fair. You know, some databases are better than others, but you know, you're generally not going to find specific data out there that's going to allow you to rely on that approach at 100%. In many cases, sometimes we don't even use it. So it really comes down to the quality of the data. But when it comes to the income approach, you go back to the same you know, foundation of value, and the income approach is built around that foundation, which is you're applying a risk structure to a cash flow stream to arrive at your value. So the risk side of the equation comes in the form of a capitalization rate, which if inverted, divided by one, turns into a multiple. So in a simplistic form, the income approach essentially is just a multiple of cash flow, and that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, that was actually kind of eye-opening to me when I actually thought of it that way, because I always used to think, typically we see valuations from CPAs, and that's the only thing they do is the cap rate, but it's, you know, very similar to like real estate approaches as well.
It is, and I think a lot of people tend to put businesses along with real estate side by side, but they're two different assets with two different risk structures. So you got to be careful of that. You know, cap rates and discount rates sound complex, but they're really not. You know, again, it comes down to your cap rate and making sure that you apply the appropriate cap rate to the appropriate stream of cash flow, because that's where a lot of mistakes are made too. But the inverse of a cap rate, you divide it by one and you get a multiple. And the funny thing is a lot of people come back to us sometimes with questions about our valuation report, and they'll say, well, where did you get this multiple from? You know, and they're thinking that we've relied on databases of other transactions to arrive at that multiple. But in fact, it's really the other way around. We develop a risk structure of the company after our analysis of all the different components that we look at. We obviously established our cash flow stream, and when you apply that cap rate or multiple to the cash flow stream, you get a value. When you divide the value by the cash flow, you get a multiple. So for us, it's reverse. You arrive at a value first, then you determine what the multiple is. Now, obviously, we have to make sure that the multiple is realistic. The good news is when it comes to small businesses, multiples generally are going to cap out at a certain level. So, you know, we've been doing this long enough to know that the multiples are going to fall in a certain range, and our job is to figure out where in that range it falls.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we always get, you know, someone calls us and says, well, you know, Bob or somebody, you know, Jane sold their business for 5x, multiple. It's a multiple of what?
Exactly. And I think a lot of the things that people tend to forget, too, is that, sellers are looking at, the public markets. They're looking at what certain stocks are selling for, and they're using those multiples. But at the end of the day, you got to be real about it. But, the one thing that people also make a misassumption about is that just because you're dealing with a common industry that has a common multiple, and let's just take accounting practices for example, we know that most accounting practices are going to sell for one to one and a quarter times sales, and usually somewhere around two and a half to 2.75 times cash flow. A lot of people make the assumption that those are the absolutes. That's what they're supposed to sell for. But the risk plays a significant role in where that value ends up and what that multiple is going to be. So you could have two different companies generating the same level of sales and the same level of cash flow, but you got one company that's got a higher level of risk. The value of that company is going to be lower, and it's going to result in a lower multiple. So you got to take all that stuff into consideration.
Well, and also, does regionality play into it as well, or is that part of the risk?
It can, but honestly, the regional nature of a business, whether it's located in Florida or Texas or California, you're not going to find that marketability, what we call in terms of multiples, is going to swing in any significant direction one way or the other, with the exception of liquor stores. And I use that as an example because liquor stores have a pretty big swing when it comes to value. Liquor stores in general are highly marketable businesses, but they're extremely marketable in the Northeast. You'll find that liquor stores in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Delaware, Massachusetts are going to sell for a multiple that's significantly higher than, let's say, a liquor store in Texas or Iowa or California or Oregon. They're just in high demand up there, and liquor licenses are limited. And as a result of that, those businesses up there, as long as they're performing well, usually sell for pretty good value.
I was in a discussion at a risk association meeting, and they had a gentleman giving a talk about value. One of the things that they used was just for, privately held independent companies was a comparison to publicly traded companies. And you want to talk a little bit about any kind of a relationship that is or is not there?
I would say it's not. There's no comparison to publicly traded companies and privately held companies. And if you look at the obvious reasons, access to capital. Publicly traded companies have an abundance of access to capital, whereas privately held companies don't. Publicly traded companies have a solid management structure with really nobody in a position where they can completely control the company. They've got board of directors they've got to report to. They've got shareholders they have to report to.
Whereas,
they've got all kinds of things that go into that. So if you end up losing, I'm not saying that if you end up losing a president or CEO to a company, let's say like Ford or GM, that's not going to have an impact on the share value, because it will. But the ability to replace that individual usually comes fairly quickly and usually does not have any significant impact on the performance of the company, at least short term, unless you get somebody in place who's just not very good at what they do. But on the privately held side, business owners have complete control of the company. They can do whatever they want. whenever they want. And sometimes that can be good and sometimes that can be bad, but the transition risk of one business owner to another when you're selling or buying a company sometimes can be very great. And that will have a significant impact on the company, and it will happen short term.
So that is one of the risk factors that you look at, is how active the seller is in the business, like being the chief cook and bottle washer would be a risk factor.
Yeah, and you'll find it on the smaller side, that the business owners of small companies, whether they're one or two people, them plus one or two people, obviously are going to have an impact on value as it pertains to transition risk. And a good example of that is a good correlation to risk and multiples are taking, for instance, private practices, medical practices, where you've got, let's say, a business called John Doe Medical, where the doctor, the owner doctor, is really the primary person that's providing all of the service. The recurring business that comes back to that individual are coming back for his or her expertise, their ability to service their clients, their bedside manner, all of the great things that you get and that you want from your doctor. But there's such a significant amount of goodwill in those medical practices because of that, that the medical practices don't sell for much. They're usually 1.75 times discretionary cash flow. But on the other side of that, you'll find that those medical practices that don't have somebody's name on the door, that have multiple staff doctors in place to see multiple a variety of different people, where that there's no significant reliance on any one of those doctors, you'll find that the multiples for those practices may jump up a little bit. So personal goodwill is a big deal when it comes to small business. Valuing the business, we take into consideration the fact that there may be some transition risk, but we assume that the business continues to operate as normal during that transition. You make a good point. Personal goodwill in small companies is a pretty big deal and carries a good amount of risk with it as well.
Well, that's actually a good point, and because in terms of valuing personal goodwill as part of like a structured sale, et cetera, is that the service that you provide?
Well, I think it's clear, because that's another assumption that people make. People tend to think that personal goodwill or goodwill in general is a value all to its own, but it's really not. Personal goodwill or goodwill in general is a byproduct of the overall value. So, for an example, if you've got a company that's worth, well, I should say the goodwill is defined essentially by the total value of the company minus its tangible assets. That's inventory, furniture, fixtures, and equipment. So if you've got a valuation of $1 million and you've got $500,000 of operating assets, your goodwill is $500,000. That's $1 million minus $500,000. But you may have great companies that generate a value of $1 million but have $1 million worth of assets. There's no goodwill in that scenario. So goodwill essentially is just a calculation. It either exists or it doesn't exist. So if you want to make sure that you've got some goodwill in the value of your company, you want to make sure that all of your variables are in check, which is limited risk, strong cash flow, good margins, and good financial trends.
Well, in terms of basically putting a value on the personal goodwill, I think there's some CPAs that basically state that they would do that. But
yeah, you can, and there are ways, and we do that as well. Essentially, what you're doing at that point is you're dissecting the total goodwill of the company into two components. It's either corporate, what we call corporate goodwill, or personal goodwill.
Right.
And the ability to arrive at that personal goodwill number, it's a challenging aspect of how to value that particular component. But it can be done, and as long as you know what you're doing, you can do it. We do it all the time.
Okay. We've been visiting with Darren Mize of GCF Valuation. When we come back, we're going to discuss, is a fee worth the benefit?
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit bizbrokertalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at bbofsa.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at eaofsa.com. Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. Today we're visiting with Darren Mize, an ASA appraiser at GCF Valuation. This last segment we're going to discuss is the fee is worth the benefit. We were talking during the break, Doug and I, that there have been quite a few businesses that out there that have been built on charging a large upfront fee to value and market the business, and we've seen those valuations and have been utterly surprised.
Yeah, a lot of times it's, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 just for the valuation, and it certainly sets it off in the wrong starting point.
Well, I would say that I don't want to put all those companies into one bucket, because there are a lot of great valuation firms out there. They're just highly priced. But there are firms out there that take advantage of people, and I've seen them. They were around pretty heavily about 10-12 years ago. But you know, if you go to any one of the big four, or however many there are now, I don't know if it's two or four, but you know, they've got valuation divisions, and you know, they won't even talk to you for less than $25,000. But you know, companies like that obviously have a very strong brand, a very strong staff, and certainly great credentials. But there are a lot of companies out there that are only looking to make a buck off of somebody, and they'll push them in a direction that guarantees the sale of their company for a certain level of value. And at the end of the day, it doesn't happen, and then they go away. And it's unfortunate, but it does happen. It's just the way the market works.
So let's talk about qualified valuation guidance. I mean, it's really not that expensive.
It's not, but the, you know, the one thing I would make sure that everybody understands too is that when we use the term qualification or qualified guidance, that comes with a definition. There are only four designations in our industry that have any credibility to valuing businesses, and those accreditations or designations come with education and testing and experience. And you've got the ASA, which I have. It's the accredited senior appraiser through the American Society of Appraisers. You've got the certified business analyst, which is or certified business appraiser, which is through the Institute of Business Appraiser. Those are the non-CPA side designations of our industry. Then you've got the certified valuation analysts, which is through the NACVA, National Association of Certified Valuation Analysts. And then through the AICPA, there's the designation because I'm not a CPA, but in order to get those designations, AVA, I think, Accredited Valuation Analyst, those designations require that the appraiser have a CPA license before they can qualify and take the test. So they're out there. But when it comes to qualified guidance, there are a lot of quality appraisers out there that, you know, like us, that do work for smaller companies that have a reasonable fee, you know, anything $5,000 or less for you know, an internal valuation to help you decide whether or not you want to list a company for sale, and use that valuation as a guidepost for that sale. There are plenty of people out there that that do good work that will charge reasonable fees. You know, doesn't mean that you run into situations that, say, for gifting or estate tax or ESOPs or divorce or things like that that require valuation guidance as well. Those are a lot more formal circumstances that require more formal valuations, and then you're running into fees that may be $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 or more. If you're going to go with some of the larger firms out there, $25,000 to $50,000 is not uncommon. So it makes a big difference when you determine first what the purpose of the valuation is, and the fee should be commensurate with that.
Yeah, and in terms of the size of the business, I think in your opinion shouldn't be a factor in basically whether you go forward with the calculation of value.
No, I mean, a lot of people make the assumption that the bigger the company, the bigger the fee should be. But really, what you're looking for as a seller is to make sure that you value the property, you value the company properly. Whether you're generating, now I'm not saying that if somebody that was looking to sell a company that's proposedly worth $100 million, a calculation report is probably not the best, because usually companies that size have two or three levels of management. They've got directors and shareholders that they report to. So something on a more formal level is going to cost a little bit more. But, for your average business owner who's just looking to sell the company and list it with a broker, whether you're generating $15 million or $20 million in sales or $100,000 in sales, the fee is not going to go up or down with the size of the company. It's based on the intended use of the valuation, the intended user, and really the scope of the engagement.
Did you have a lot of changes? As kind of the audience may not know this, but periodically the USPAP, Uniform Standards of Appraisal Practices, will come out with new standards. And I know Doug and I are both machinery equipment appraisers. It changed dramatically January 1st of this year. How much did it change for you?
Well, you not much. I mean, there are USPAP. Is the guideline for which most appraisers will follow. There are other variations of that, but for the most part, USPAP is pretty much the book that we follow. And they make changes from time to time, but we haven't seen really anything significant. That doesn't mean we don't keep up with court cases, because court cases set precedent, and precedent sometimes impacts changes in the standards that we have to follow. So as an appraiser, my responsibility is to keep up with all those changes, but I'm also required to take a USPAP class, and I'm required to be tested on that once every 4 years.
So the influencing factors, I guess, in what goes into a appraisal is the IRS, the court system, and a USPAP?
Yes, that is correct. But you got to remember, when it comes to, let's say, a calculation report, not all appraisals have to follow USPAP, and that's something else a business owner and a broker needs to know. Our calculation reports, for example, that we use for business brokers who are using the valuation to list the business for sale, doesn't follow USPAP. It's a restricted use report that eliminates probably three or four or five guidelines out of the 13 that were required to maintain USPAP. Guidelines, we eliminate some of that stuff to maintain a more reasonable fee structure, but yet it still allows us to arrive at a credible conclusion. So not all valuation reports have to follow USPAP, but the appraiser must specifically state in the report that it doesn't and why they're not using it. USPAP is something that is going to be used in the formatting and guideline of every formal report, and that would be... like I said, we mentioned a bunch of reasons earlier, but anything for gifting or estate purposes or anything involving the IRS, usually USPAP is going to be the main format for that guide.
Well, keeping in line with the segment, is the fee worth the benefit? We talked a little bit earlier in terms of a pre-qualification for SBA loans. Maybe we can discuss the assignability or the use of that by the buyer as part of the transaction.
Well, before we even get into that, I mean, I think the question is the fee worth it. The question I always like to ask somebody is, as a business owner, your business is likely the most valuable asset that you own. It doesn't make sense to go out to the market and try to sell it without some professional guidance as to what it's worth. Perception is not necessarily reality. So, the ability to spend $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 to make sure that you're maximizing the value of the company is a very important step. Anybody who doesn't want to do that may not be committed to the process. But that being said,
plus they don't trust that broker anyway.
Well, that too. I mean, and that goes back to the credibility of the listing. I mean, you know, brokers are very good at rendering market-based experience when it comes to value. They have a good knowledge of the value that's local and what they think certain businesses will sell for. But you know, a broker is not a qualified expert when it comes to valuing companies. Now, in the event that they are, you come into a different conundrum, which is, do you want to go to market with a listing and a value that's been set by a broker? The broker has a vested interest, just like the seller, in making sure that business sells for as much as possible. There's a conflict of interest there. So when you start getting to the credibility of the listing, having a value set by an independent source provides some comfort to a prospective buyer who's taking a look at this company, and they come into the process, and the first question is going to be, how did you arrive at your value? You have two responses, or maybe even three. My CPA said it, my broker said it, which you're immediately going to turn them away, or I've had it appraised by an independent appraiser. That's a lot more comforting to a buyer because they know that there's been no bias and conflict in that equation. They have some sense of comfort knowing that somebody not attached to this particular transaction set the price, and they're more likely to engage in a discussion about the value at that point.
Well, so in terms of getting it done in the SBA loan, the assignability, is that something? Because I've heard differing stories on that.
Well, what the bank is going to do is that, you know, obviously when it comes to qualifications and pre-underwriting for an SBA loan, the buyer is going to want to submit as much information as possible, especially what the lender is requiring. And that may include a business valuation done on behalf of the seller or the seller's broker. The lender can certainly take that into consideration. They're not going to use it as part of the closing process, but they'll use it as part of their pre-qualification process to see whether or not the business is even worth taking a look at or not. Now, once the underwriter gets to a point where they're ready to move ahead, and everything is put in place for the loan to go forward and it's going through underwriting, the lender does have a choice as to whether or not they want to re-engage the appraiser who would perform the original appraisal, or if they want to engage a separate appraiser or appraisal firm to do another valuation. Now, 9 times out of 10, the original valuation firm that did the valuation is probably going to be engaged to update it. But there are certain times when there is a significant amount of transparency that needs to take place in a transaction and a loan where the bank may choose to go outside and find another appraiser to do that. And they have access to a variety of appraisers all over the country. So I don't want to say it can be assigned, but what the lender will do in the instance where they go back to the original appraiser is that they will engage the appraiser to update the original valuation report to satisfy SBA lending requirements, to update the financials to make sure that the valuation is accurate. And the SBA does require that the valuation be independent, which means that nobody can engage the appraiser to do a valuation for an SBA loan other than the lender. They do give some flexibility to the buyer, and some banks actually, not many, but some banks do authorize the buyer to engage the appraiser directly and pay them directly, but you know, 99% of the time it's the lender who engages the appraiser and it's the lender who pays the fee.
Yeah, because even if the lender is engaging directly, they're usually charging the buyer anyway.
Well, they are, and a lot of buyers make the assumption that because they're paying for the valuation fee that they own the valuation, but that's not actually the case. The buyer actually is paying a fee as part of the closing costs, which includes the cost of the valuation. It's the lender who owns the report.
Because they're the intended user, right?
That is correct. They are the intended user. They're the one who is engaging the appraiser. They are the one who is paying the appraiser. The confidentiality lies between, at that point, the appraiser and the lender. The only time a buyer or a seller or a broker can get access to a copy of that valuation is with the lender's approval first.
And as an appraiser, that's not a problem in terms of the lender sharing it?
No, not at all. What they'll do, the lender, like in our case, the lender will come to us and say, we would like to provide a copy to the buyer. Do we have your authorization? And we have a non-intended user authorization form that we will have the lender provide to the buyer to sign. And then once that's been executed, then we'll forward a copy of the valuation to them.
Do you sometimes get valuations that could have been done years before as an influencing factor, or as a data point, or I don't know how you look at that, but you sometimes get prior years appraisals.
We do, and we generally only use those appraisals as a basis for general information. We want to see what they came up with in terms of value. We want to see if the basis of that valuation was used in a current listing or purchase price or purchase agreement. But it's really only it's just information. Once an appraisal gets beyond about 6 to 8 months, it generally becomes outdated. I mean, businesses change value every single day, especially when it comes to their balance sheet. So, I mean, as long as everything stays remainingly constant throughout the year, 6 to 8 months is usually the shelf life. We give it a year. Beyond that, it's got to be done completely all over again.
Yeah, we tell people in the business brokerage world we can only see out about 90 days, and that's even pretty foggy.
Yeah, you got to remember, too, that that doesn't mean that 90 days is a short. 90 days, especially if you've got a volatile company that's got some significant movement in certain areas, especially when it comes to the balance sheet of the company, the balance sheet changes every single day. The business's financial reports in terms of profit and loss and income generally remain steady for a quarter, maybe 2 quarters throughout the year. So as long as you're on track with, projecting financial results for the company in a given year, and the company's interim statements are following that trend, if you value the company at the beginning of the year and it hits close to its mark for the end of the year, then the valuation is probably good for that 12-month period. But beyond that, then you got to update everything. You've got industry cycles that change. You got market data that can change. Economic factors that change beyond 12 months. And most of the databases that we subscribe to are going to change about every 6 to 12 months. Once you get through that next cycle of information, you've got to update everything, which is why we don't go beyond 12 months.
Right. So we like listing businesses with a qualified appraisal attached to it because it does help the efficiency of the selling process and helps determine value. Today we've been visiting with Darren Mize of GCF Valuation. Darren can be reached at his email address, which is dmize@gvalue. That's G as in George, the word value.com. dmize@gvalue.com. Darren, thank you for having us be on our show today.
It's been my pleasure, Doug and Robert. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Darren.
My pleasure.
Thank you again for joining us today for Biz Broker Talk. Please join Robert and Doug again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. After today's show, we hope you are one step closer to a successful sale of your business.